I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beam me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live for the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate you being along board for a Wednesday show here on CBS Sports Radio and heard across all of our devices at watchda.com. You can watch the show or on the CBS Sports app, radio.com, or on Apple Music. Next hour, Miles Boykin's going to join us. Notre Dame wide receiver, projected to perhaps go as early as the second round in the upcoming NFL draft. We'll talk to Miles Boykin coming up 1 hour from now. But there's a lot of news swirling around sports media and how these leagues are being covered and how technology is shifting. And a brand new league last week that debuted, and the NBA heading into All-Star Weekend. And so joining us here to break it all down is a friend of ours, Richard Deitch, covers the media and has for a long time, currently for The Athletic. Richard, good morning. How we doing?
Good. Good to be with you, dear.
You too, man. Thanks so much for joining us as always. Let's start with the end of football season. Tony Romo continues to garner a lot of national attention for his predictions and his style and just year two of being a color commentator, already doing the Super Bowl. Why is it that Romo has the ability to seemingly call out or predict plays, but other recently retired players either don't or never have?
Well, you know, you're talking about a unique figure. First off, it's a quarterback, and a quarterback who played at a very high level for 14 years. So the position itself on the field is the one in which you not only obviously have to know your plays, your offense, but you have to diagnose defenses and break it down. So positionally, the quarterback, at least in terms of being an NFL analyst, will always, I think, have an advantage over other positions because you see the whole field. Then, in terms of Tony Romo specifically, you're talking about somebody who really is a football wonk, someone who loves film, just loves the sort of the study, nuance, and breakdown of football. So he has kind of the right ethos for it. He has a curiosity in terms of sort of why things are happening. Stylistically, he has his own style. He's kind of goofy and unique in that way and sort of unafraid to sort of be himself, I guess I would say, on air. And, you know, you combined all those different things and you set it up, as CBS has, where you give Romo the freedom to be himself. And one of the things I think is just normal for him, because he's really into the quarterback position, is kind of just predicting what the quarterback he's watching is going to do. He happens to be great at it, I think, because a lot of the teams that he and Jim Nantz have covered, he really, really knows, particularly the Patriots. They have done the Patriots so many times, and I think Romo has been in so many production meetings with Brady and Belichick, that he's particularly good at figuring out what read Tom Brady has to have in a game. So a lot of the times when Tony sort of performs this magic trick, he's doing with the Patriots, and he's got a wealth of information with him. So you basically, he's able to do it because you just have this unique combination of guy. And then you couple that with the experiences he's already had.
So I find the tau of Tony Romo really interesting, because all of those things make sense, except we've had a ton of quarterbacks retire and then end up as analysts on games the next year, whether it's Troy Aikman, or now we have Trent Green and Kurt Warner and Steve Berline, and go down the list. Back in the day, it was Joe Namath and Terry Bradshaw. Is this just something that Romo stumbled upon? Like, oh, people like me predicting plays, so I'm going to keep doing it. Like, why didn't any of the other quarterbacks that ever retired try to do this?
Well, the one thing with Romo is actually CBS doesn't want him to, like, the one thing they've actually sort of fought against is they don't want him to be known as, you know, a guy who's doing magic. You know, they don't want him to be Doug Henning. They don't want him to be pulling magic tricks every broadcast. You know, they want him to be sort of known more for being a really quality analyst, which he is. And occasionally he sort of does this thing which people react to. I think in terms of, you know, whether it's Aikman or Kurt Warner or Phil Simms, whatever, it's just we're talking about styles. My guess is that they have, in different times in their careers, absolutely foreshadowed what was going to happen. What happened with Romo, and Romo and I have talked about this, is he did it, if you remember, D.A., in his first ever game. I think it was Oakland, Tennessee. And he did this a number of times, and I think because there was so much attention on Romo's first broadcast, and naturally so, former Cowboys quarterback, most famous, most polarizing team, doing his first game on the number one team where he was taking over for Phil Simms, having never ever done a NFL broadcast before. And in that game, he predicted, if I remember right, you know, six or seven of these plays before they happen, and people are like, wow, you know, I've never seen that before. The reality is they probably have seen it before, but there was so much attention on Romo in that game, and it's so fresh that people remember it. So that's why, and then obviously like everything else, it's played upon itself. And then in the, you know, prior to the Super Bowl, the game where more people saw Tony Romo do something, 54 million people, he was just unbelievable in that Chiefs-Patriots game, where especially in the fourth quarter and overtime, he was calling things before they happened. And that's 54 million people watching that game. And thus, Romo became a storyline heading into the Super Bowl. So all of this has kind of played, you know, it's sort of played upon itself, played upon itself, played upon itself. And now we're at the point where I think it's very fair to say Tony Romo's the best NFL analyst on television.
Mm. Richard Deitch joins us this morning on the show from The Athletic. Stories have popped up this week that the Patriots might not be the Thursday night opener this upcoming year, which has always been the territory of the Super Bowl champions. Instead, maybe it's going to be Bears and Packers to celebrate 100 years of the NFL. I felt this year at the Super Bowl that more than ever there was a national anger and animosity towards the Patriots. There's always been this kind of under-the-surface bubbling of resentment for their success, but I really felt it was an outward hate now of the Patriots. Does that have anything to do with this idea that the Pats would not be on the opening Thursday night?
I don't doubt that there are people around the country who are tired of the Patriots, and I'm sure there are writers who are tired of writing about it. To me, Patriots fatigue is just nonsense because you should, and again, this is a very subjective view, we should celebrate dynasties. Like, I'm fascinated by the Patriots. I'm fascinated by the Warriors. Like, those are interesting teams to me, and historically, the television ratings prove that people are interested in dynasties. Why the NFL would want Bears-Packers next year, I think you sort of hit on it. There's sort of an anniversary mark, and that's interesting. Chicago is the number three media market in the country. They're a good team, so they're going to bring viewers. Packers are historically one of the great TV teams, along with the Cowboys and the Patriots. And so, you know, there's an argument to be made there. I don't think this is sort of conspiratorial. I think this would be more of the NFL is kind of looking for maybe an interesting Thursday night opener. They have this major, major media market in Chicago, and they have one of the great all-time franchises in the Packers. And, you know, that's an enticing matchup. And probably, I have to sort of think about this, but I would think probably for NBC, a potentially bigger viewership than if you replayed the Patriots and the Rams on opening week. I think it'd be pretty close. But make no mistake about this, DA, whatever you're hearing about, you know, dislike of the Patriots and Patriots fatigue, blah, blah, blah. Trust me, when all these network executives are talking to the NFL schedule makers and Howard Katz at the NFL's group, they are all clamoring to get Patriot games because, like the Cowboys, the Patriots will always deliver viewers.
Absolutely right. I wonder about last week. The Alliance did a better overall national rating than the NBA in that time slot. We know, though, that there's going to be a novelty that wears off and ratings are going to come down for the Alliance. But what did you make of the Alliance having that number last week?
I think your attitude here is right. Just use caution and common sense. The XFL, in its first ever game back in 2001, was watched by 17 million people. And if you remember, you might, I don't know if you remember this, but I'm sure some of your listeners will. There was all this talk about, you know, we've got this great second league. The XFL is incredible. It's going to be game changing. And, you know, like 5 weeks later, me, you, and the guy down the street were the only people watching the XFL. So, you know, I would say sort of caution. That said, it's a great number to start for a league that did not have a ton of publicity, that's a league that does not necessarily have many name brand players in it. A very, very good start, $3.5 million. Beating the NBA, I mean, I think that's like a nice note, but I wouldn't put any sort of major stock into it because I think a lot of people, first of all, football's far and away the most popular sport in the country. There was a curiosity factor. It was on a network. Keep in mind, it wasn't on ESPN or the NFL network. It was on a network, CBS. And I think you got a nice curiosity number. The interesting number after that, which did not get as much publicity, the NFL network's first broadcast of the AAF, 640,000 viewers. Again, on the, I would say that's a nice number. That's a pretty good number for the NFL network. But that is not 3 million. So I would just say to people, sort of caution. To me, the most interesting number in this league will be, let's say, the last week of the regular season and the playoffs. Because if they can retain, I'll sort of throw this out there, if they can retain 60% of their opening week number, I think that's a really good story. If by the end of the year, you know, 1 million or 900,000 people are watching the AAF championship, that's not a good story for the league, and they're going to have to keep promoting. But the one thing I think that this league is going to prove is I think there's going to be a demand for football between February and April. And I think if they play it right, I think they got a shot at being a niche product over the next decade.
Yeah, I agree. Richard Deitch joins us from The Athletic. Let's go back to that NBA thing. One of the big overarching national stories has been that the NBA's ratings have been down this year. People have pointed to LeBron playing on the West Coast, perhaps Warriors fatigue. What do you point to?
Yeah, I mean, I think LeBron moving to the West Coast is a absolute legitimate major factor and perhaps the biggest factor in terms of the primetime games being down. Again, keep in mind that these numbers late in the year will pop because the games have more meaning, so we'll see the number by the end of the year. It should be down. It just won't be as down as much now. But LeBron James was destination viewing. And he was destination viewing for East Coast viewers. You move him to the West, and you really, they've struggled this year to find games in the 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock Eastern time zone window that are really compelling. The Celtics have not been as good, I think, as people thought. The Sixers are interesting, but still I would not say are a national team. I live in Toronto. The Raptors are phenomenal, but you don't get the Toronto market, and still there's not enough American fans who will tune in to watch the Raptors game. So LeBron leaving is a real factor. The other thing, DA, is, and, you know, this is where the NBA gets a little bit hurt in terms of market size. The Knicks are horrific, and the Bulls are not any kind of television draw. So you have two Eastern Conference teams that are the number one and number three media markets in the country, which if they were any good, just by sheer numbers, they would bring in a ton of viewers. But the NBA cannot really put the Knicks or the Bulls in any kind of TNT, ESPN, ABC primetime window because they're horrible and no one's interested. So the league would really, really be helped if even one of those franchises became a player in the league. You would see the viewership numbers of those early games go way up just on sheer city size alone.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you about Bob Costas, because this has now become a story over the last couple of days that Costas was essentially shoved out or not allowed to talk about CTE and concussions, and this is why things broke down between him and NBC Sports, that Bob Costas is now without a national big-time platform as the preeminent sports journalist of our generation. How does it make you feel? How do you read the situation that Bob Costas was unable to even fight the winds of change when it comes to the NFL power?
Well, I got to be honest. I'm a realist when it comes to this stuff. I'm certainly a cynic. I don't think that anyone who's working for a current NFL media rights holder can be a real hard truth teller when it comes to either the pregame or the in-game stuff. You can talk about criminality. You could talk about things that happen with players, maybe even sometimes be critical of owners, although I would argue that's very light criticism. But when it comes to like what I would consider the third rail issues of the NFL, and that's like brain injury, concussions. I'm talking about things that could really impact the financial future of this league. No one's going to be a truth teller. It's just, you know, as much as you think Chris Collinsworth is like an honest, truth-telling guy, when is the last time you ever heard Chris Collinsworth on a broadcast go 2 minutes on significant brain injuries and the damage that the NFL product can do to people? It's just not going to happen. So I think Costas ran up against that. There are some who could criticize Costas, and I think it would be fair to say, hey, you've always thought this. Why did you even come back in 2005 to be, or whatever it was, whatever the date was, to be the front man of Football Night in America? But the reality is, I think if you want, if you are interested in this stuff, and I realize a lot of football fans are not, but if you are interested in this stuff, the only way you're really going to get it is from the investigative reporters at places like ESPN or the New York Times or the Washington Post or, you know, wherever, Sports Illustrated. You're not getting this on the pregame shows on NBC, Fox, CBS, and you're certainly not getting it in-game.
Richard Deitch has covered the sports media landscape for a long time. I'm a subscriber to The Athletic. I really enjoy it. It's quality content. So, yeah, for our listeners out there that want more quality content, I highly encourage The Athletic. That's a really cool place to find it. Richard Deitch writes there about the sports media. Always good to catch up, Rich. Thanks so much, my man.
Thanks for the invite, D.A. I appreciate it.
You got it. Richard Deitch joining us this morning here on the D.A. Show. Really interesting stuff all across the board. And a lot of stuff we could pick apart. I think the Costas thing is really interesting, and I think he's right that as credible as Costas is and always has been, that the NFL is so powerful and so influential that even Costas can't run up against it and win that battle. And that's disappointing, and it's frustrating, and that's why I really appreciate the fact that CBS has never muzzled me on my criticisms of the owners, who I've called all types of terrible names, and the league, which I have obviously thrown wads of spitballs at and flame-thrown a number of times, and we are a rights holder at CBS. However, I'm in a different spot than Bob Costas because I'm not on the game broadcasts. So I appreciate the freedom that I've been given by CBS, but I realize I would not be allowed to say the things that I do on a game broadcast, and probably why I will never be invited onto a game broadcast. But it's disappointing that Costas, with all the credibility he had, could not say anything about CTE without getting pushed out of that job. That's disappointing. When we come back, remember Daisuke Matsuzaka? Well, apparently his arm's about to fall off. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Good value, big upside.
If he dies, he dies. Kill him.
Move the radio show over and
that's
run
right.
The next play.
Yeah, that's right.
On the ground
get,
over there.
Get the next DA in air.
Yeah.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
A little creepy laugh from Pete Prisco.
Yeah. Yeah.
25 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Brand new permission granted podcast, the PGP, the show about the show within the show. We deep dive deeper, if that's possible, into the Ariana Grande story that we did yesterday. And Andrew Bogish joined Side B with Merez of the PGP, all available right now for your listening pleasure. All places podcasts are downloaded.
Electronically ignorant.
Remember that guy, Daisuke Matsuzaka? Remember that dude? At one point in time, he was supposed to be the future of baseball. Merez, remember the gyro ball? Who was going to catch up to the mysterious Japanese gyro ball of Daisuke Matsuzaka?
Unhittable. Never to be seen again.
You felt, because this was after the 04 World Series, you had to feel as though now the Red Sox loaded up with Daisuke Matsuzaka and the gyro ball. My Yankees don't stand a chance. The Red Sox are going to rip off 10, 12 straight AL East pennants and probably end up winning 7 to 8 World Championships with the screwball.
Like any obvious diehard baseball fan. I wanted the Yankees to sign Daisuke Matsuzaka because we've seen so much of him in Japan that we wanted him to star on our team.
That was a really funny time in baseball where, because Hideo Nomo had come over and been successful, was the rookie of the year with the Dodgers, and there was maybe one or two other players. There was the Hideki Arabu, although that ended up being very bad. But there was a time where the Japanese stars, especially pitchers, was like, you've got to get that guy. Keiagawa, Hideki Arabu,
stunk.
Daisuke Matsuzaka,
stunk.
It was all about, we've got to get these guys.
Hiroki Kuroda was pretty good.
It was like getting the arms, Chan-ho Park, Japanese, Korean, Asian baseball pitchers. They had built up the strength of their arm because as a teenager, they were throwing like 150 pitches a game, and it was, they'll come over here and they're going to mow you down. They're just going to be lights out. They're going to win Cy Young Awards and be aces. And so once Daisuke was on the scene, you had to get him. Remember, as a teenager in the late 90s, he threw a 148 pitch shutout, and then the next day, I believe, threw 17 innings and 250 pitches in the quarterfinals of their enormous national high school baseball tournament, which ended up being a chapter in Jeff Passan's book about elbows and Tommy Johns and the pitching arm. And so there was this Bo Jackson quality of, we heard he did it, but did he really do it? Larger than life. The Paul Bunyan of pitchers. We need Daisuke. And the Red Sox sign him, and he ends up helping them win that 07 World Series.
Yeah, I mean, helping. Sure, he wasn't exactly a dominant force on the mound in that World Series run.
No, but I think he was a starter on the rotation right throughout, and then wasn't he also a starter on the 08 team that lost to the Rays in the ALCS? I think he had a two-year run where
right.
He was part of teams that went all the way to the ALCS.
Definitely a part, but definitely not, you know, the focal point of the runs.
So then he flames out, and Daisuke just falls off the map, and nobody in baseball really wants Daisuke anymore, and so he ends up going back to Japan. I had thought 5 years ago he retired. He left after 2014 Major League Baseball. And Merez, did you know he was pitching in Japan? I thought he had retired.
I assumed he retired. I didn't scour the rosters in the Japanese League. Maybe I should have.
You
but
really
yeah.
should have. Yeah.
I thought for sure he was gonzo.
Okay, so it ends up being that he did not retire. He was pitching in Japan, or at least he was supposed to be pitching in Japan. He signed with the Chunichi Dragons. Okay? Long storied history with the Chunichi Dragons. And he has been out with arm injuries the last 3 years, or his first 3 years in Japan. 15, 16, 17. 15, 16, 17. 3 years. 3 years. He threw one inning for the Dragons. One! Actually, I flipped that around. He went out there to play for the SoftBank Hawks. Again, you know the SoftBank Hawks.
Yeah, they're like the Buffalo Bills of the Japanese League. Get close, never get over the hump.
He signed with the SoftBank Hawks. 3 years, SoftBank Hawks, one inning. 3 years, one inning, all arm injuries. So then he comes back last year. He's the comeback player of the year for the SoftBank Hawks. Because he finally gets through the entire season, goes 6-4 with a 3.74 ERA. Fine, not great, but after people think your arm fell off, that's good enough to be the comeback player of the year.
Can I just say 6-4, 3.74 ERA?
Only 55 innings.
Was he the only candidate for comeback player of the year?
So now he's part of the Chunichi Dragons, okay? And maybe his career is back on track. The great Daisuke Matsuzaka. And unfortunately now, he's experiencing pain in his right shoulder. Tends to happen, obviously. Lots of arm trouble. He's now 38 years old. So, that's understandable. Obviously, spring training is here. Baseball season right around the corner. He threw a little bit too hard. Oh, no. This is not normal arm trouble. Daisuke Matsuzaka is experiencing pain in his right shoulder after a, quote, overzealous admirer pulled his throwing arm during a fan event. No. No. Daisuke throws one inning over 3 years in Japan. One inning. Finally comes back as the comeback player of the year, and now his arm is pulled out of its socket with inflammation because a fan? A fan at a fan event? What happened to you? Did he just shake the fan's arm too vigorously? Was it like a girl grabbed him from the side and tried to pull him over for a selfie? Did he get hit by a selfie stick? What happened to Daisuke's arm? Mirazzi was finally back. Daisuke was finally back. And now at a fan event, a fan pulled his arm out of his socket.
Was Popeye shaking his hand? And at one point, when he first reaches in, how long of a shake does it take to pull the arm out of the socket?
It's a long shake.
You got to pull away right away if it's that hard a shake.
It's a hard shake. What can you say?
How could it happen?
How could it happen? It's a hard shake. This is terrible. Daisuke's arm must be made of paper mache.
How could it?
How can a baseball pitcher be on the mend because he shook the hand of somebody at a fan event?
Look at this!
And Trevor Bauer's droid is laughing at Daisuke Matsuzaka's fan.
Could you imagine Daisuke's career now back in the tank because an overzealous fan?
On the bright side, next year he could win Comeback Player of the Year again.
Oh, man.
How did that happen?
How could it happen? Oh, Daisuke's arm. So, wait a second. So, you're telling me there might be long-lasting negative effects to throwing 250 pitches as a high school teenager? That's not good. Okay. When we come back here on the show, your sound check, your best audio of the day, including our favorite, the Duke Blue Devils and Coach K also getting a huge comeback win, which we will discuss coming up here as part of Soundcheck. And a little Joel Embiid licking his wounds after the Sixers once again collapse against the Celtics, who are totally in their heads. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's the show about the show. Here's the best of this week's Permission Granted podcast.
Do you think that only you and I find the Grande story this fascinating, or do other people share our passion for it? Because I think around the newsroom, we were unique in how much we really cared about
them. Probably, but I think if we've learned anything at CBS Sports Radio for 7 years, there's a lot of people that don't really share our same uniqueness and thoughts. But I haven't really gotten a chance to discuss this with my friends and stuff like that. I'm going to make a hard bid to bring up this story to as many people as I can throughout the rest of the week and weekend. I'm going to Ariana Grande parent this story.
Download the PGP today on iTunes and play.it or listen at daoncbs.com and the show's Facebook page, ZapSap.
Because 27 minutes on yesterday's show wasn't enough, we deep dive further into the Ariana Grande story. Coincidentally, a 5-year-old toddler youngin at a Florida Panthers game gets hit not once but twice by errant pucks, happens to find herself on the Zamboni, the subject of a picture, full size, and a front page story in the Florida Sun Sentinel, a major newspaper in South Florida, and then suddenly becomes international superstar pop sensation Ariana Grande. We smell a rat around here, and we deep dove into this as part of the PGP, the Permission Granted podcast, available right now, all places podcasts are downloaded.
Get them out.
Let me also... That was Maggie Gray, by the way, our good friend over on WFAN in New York, and she dropped to get him out. And we were listening in the newsroom, and both immediately, me and Pete the Body Bilotti's ears turned up like a pair of prairie dogs that looked at one another and said, we need that as a drop.
Get him out.
And this is what happens when you work with someone long enough. It's like being married to somebody long enough. It's like pet parents that end up looking like their pets. you just all start thinking alike. And Maggie could have said 1,000 different words around those three. But as soon as she said, get them out, all of our ear to the newsroom perked up. Oh, we got to get that for a drop.
Get them out.
Get them out. So what was I talking about? I have no idea. Ariana Grande and the PGP. So deep dive into this. I should just note here, I kept reading about this yesterday because I just find the odds of this so impossible. How could it happen?
How could it happen?
I am still beside myself at the odds of this. But here's a couple of other nuggets that I found, Mraz.
Wow, Holmes and Watson?
I kept digging. Number one, does it change your opinion of how we feel as though it's inevitable that her parents positioned her for the fame and attention because they were attention hoo-ahs, making sure she was put in front and center places to draw the attention? Does it make you feel any differently that it turns out their season tickets were around the penalty box?
Well, I do need to issue an apology because I assume they were behind the net.
Yes, you did. You were hard on this. It had to have been behind the net. Our friend Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy, for ESPN.com now, said the season tickets were around the penalty box.
Okay, so my bit as far as them, you know, putting her in harm's way probably doesn't hold water. However,
correct,
I still think she could have been hit with an errant puck, and pucks could fly that way. That the second time, I am not buying there was a direct hit on her. I am buying that she was in or around that. You know, you make up a little bruise there, you go up, and you do it for the attention because you saw how much attention happened the first time.
The other part that calls into question our pretty vicious accusations of a conspiracy theory by her parents is that apparently her mom paid $200 for her to get on the Zamboni. We had assumed it was a lot more expensive. It was an auction, and that she bid $200.
But she still went to the auction. She still outbid the auction on purpose here. I have a little more digging for you. I have a 6 degrees of separation.
Okay.
The voice of the Florida Panthers that year was Chris Moore.
I saw that on Twitter. How does Chris Moore not have better inside information for us?
As far as I'm concerned, how many season ticket holders were there? Shouldn't Chris Moore, as the voice of the Panthers, have known all the season ticket holders?
And how amazing is it to think that Chris Moore, who oftentimes fills in for this show, had a previous life as the Florida Panthers play-by-play voice 20-some-odd years ago?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to hear Rodney Dangerfield call Scott Mellenby's name, I'm sure that was the place for you.
No.
20 years ago, it was a 5-year-old Ariana Grande with curly hair and a pudgy face on a Zamboni getting hit by pucks. 20 years later, she's one of the most famous people on the planet, and Chris Moore is filling in for this show. I mean, talk about how space and time continuum is just impossible to define. How could this all happen?
It all ties together somehow.
Really, I really now feel like we're living in a simulation and somebody's just playing with us. Because how is it possible? How does any of this happen? I don't understand it. Ariana Grande happened to be hit by two pucks again. I will say this. I just want to reiterate this. If you are listening in Detroit, you are listening in Toronto, you are listening in New York, you're listening in Chicago, you're listening in any major hockey city, my guess is there are people in your city that have had season tickets to that hockey team for no less than 30 years and haven't been hit by one puck, let alone two, in the lower bowl. You can live your entire life and go to every damn hockey game possible behind the penalty box, and you wouldn't be hit by one puck, let alone two, by the age of five. She got hit by two by the age of five and happened to become Ariana Grande? It just is impossible. The numbers behind that are impossible. It's like winning Powerball 3 straight times in a row.
And her parents knew in that town, It wasn't going to be the 97 champion Marlins. It wasn't going to be the Heat with Alonzo Mourning. And it certainly wasn't going to be Dan Marino's Miami Dolphins that they got her close to. They got her. They picked the one team where she would have a chance.
You're the rat.
To become famous there.
Also, I think you owe her parents an apology and Ariana an apology. I found out that she has gone back to sing the national anthem at a Florida Panthers game.
Well, I expect. All right, I'm sorry, Ariana.
And you said she was a bandwagon Fairweather fan. She was recently photographed in a Florida Panthers jersey.
You know what, though? Good for her, then. Good for her. I apologize, Ariana. Ariana?
Ariana.
And I hope you forgive me.
Yeah.
Good girl.
Good for her. God bless.
All right. More on this story as part of the PGP this week. It is time for your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
I just love Mraz's attitude of shoot first, ask questions later. Trash everybody as hard as possible, and then if proven wrong, say, oh, you know what? Sorry. Good girl. Like, okay.
Mraz is fat.
All right, on sound check, Cliff Kingsbury insists that everybody pointing Kyler Murray in the Cardinals' direction is wrong. Josh Rosen still his dude.
Our feelings towards Josh haven't waned or changed or anything. I get we have the first pick, and so there's going to be a million scenarios over the next 3 months that are going to come up. But, no, Josh is our guy, and, you know, Kyler's a tremendous player, and I said that was being very complimentary before we played an opponent. And I understand the soundbite, but like I said, there'll be a ton of scenarios that come up before we get to the draft.
I just wish Cliff Kingsbury would say, yeah, Josh is our guy. Right now, .. at this moment, .. at this time. Because if the New York Giants or Washington or some other quarterback-starved team, the Denver Broncos, knocks on the door of the Arizona Cardinals and says, we will offer you two number ones for Josh Rosen, guess what? Rosen is out of there. They will trade Rosen quicker than you would get sunburn in Phoenix in the middle of March. I'm telling you, they will ship him and sell him quickly if they get the right deal. I'm not saying they should. I like Josh Rosen. And I think reaching on Kyler Murray in the first round is exactly that, a reach and a risk. But I'll tell you this, right? Yes, Josh is our guy. Josh is our guy. Josh is our guy. Until they get an offer, and then they'll trade him. Because I think that smells inevitable in Arizona. Kendall Gill joined Taz of the Moose, former NBA standout. And he discussed Zion Williamson this morning after the Duke Blue Devils come all the way back from a 23-point deficit to beat Louisville last night, 71-69 at the KFC Yum Center.
I see Larry Johnson with more athleticism. He's going to develop a shot. Yeah, he doesn't have a consistent shot right now, but when he puts the work in, shooters can be made. You know, shooters aren't born, they're made. So, you know, he knocks down three-pointers here and there. So, you know, when he gets the time to consistently work on his jump shot, but you can't argue with all the other stuff.
Yeah, I like that comparison, actually. Larry Johnson, more athleticism. I like that a lot. Remember, Larry Johnson was an all-star, was a first-team all-pro in the NBA, first-team all-star, all-NBA, but just injuries ravaged him, and his back gave out on him. LJ could have been a Hall of Famer. I like that comp a lot, and I think that Zion's going to be dominant in the NBA. I just don't know how you have that combination of speed, athleticism, power, jumping ability, hops, explosion, and a jump shot and not be dominant. And as Kendall said, you can teach the jump shot. He'll be able to shoot ultimately. Right now, what he has, you just can't teach it. He's wrecking shop. And last night, he was the engine behind the comeback. And finally, Joel Embiid, yet again, the Sixers lose to the Celtics.
I'm an idiot. Should have kicked it out, though. Take it out or shoot it. I didn't think about the situation and us not having a timeout. I thought we had one, and then as soon as I shot it, I looked and I was like, I'm stupid. Like I said, that's on me. I need to do a better job. And do right for you, suck.
So that was Embiid largely taking blame for being down three and then putting back a layup instead of kicking it out for a game-tying three-pointer. And he's right, that was a stupid play. But then he goes on and rips the officials. And more so, I think we should focus on the fact that he said he sleepwalked through the first three quarters against Al Horford. Well, this is a huge game, and you're the best player on the floor, and they're without Kyrie Irving. So why were you sleepwalking? This is the team that has your number. You cannot get over the Celtics. They punked you last year in the playoffs, and they're punking you this year in the regular season, and they'll punk you again if they play in the postseason. This is your chance to rewrite the narrative, and you were the one that admits you sleepwalked through the first three quarters. Why wouldn't you take that game last night more seriously off the top? That's got to be on Joel Embiid. Who knows what to believe about that Sixers team? Our toll-free line brought to you by Geico, everyone. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Homeowners, renters, motorcycle insurance, too. Get it all, geico.com. Our next guest is a potential second-round draft pick coming up in the NFL draft, Notre Dame wide receiver Miles Boykin. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.